future through their energy forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward.
You're listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
And coming up next is headlines, and after that, we're going to have a conversation about the upcoming event of Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, as they've been selected as one of the 10 communities in Minnesota to host the 2025 Sketches of Minnesota. They'll be coming up in a bit. Looking at weather today, cloudy with highs 78 to 82 degrees, south winds 10 to 17 miles per hour. Tonight, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 a.m., cloudy with temps 60 to 63 degrees and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
You are correct. The Jolly Green Giant does not have a wreath.
Uh-huh.
Do you know where the Jolly Green Giant originated? Where they're from?
They're from Minnesota, but I can't remember.
Blue Earth, Minnesota.
All right. Now it's time for headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The federal government is shut down after Congress failed to pass a spending bill to keep it funded and open beyond last night. It's the first shutdown in 6 years. Republicans said no to a bill proposed by Democratic lawmakers yesterday. It would have funded the government through October while extending federal health care subsidies that are set to expire at the end of the year. Democrats blocked a Republican bill to keep the government funded for 7 weeks without the health care provisions. Each measure needed 60 votes to pass. Despite the shutdown, some essential government functions continue, including the U.S. military, air traffic controllers, Social Security, and Medicare. One casualty of the government shutdown is U.S. employment's report for the month of September. As NPR's Scott Horsley reports, the numbers were due out Friday, but that's now on hold.
Nearly everyone at the Bureau of Labor Statistics has been sidelined by the government shutdown. That means the Bureau won't be collecting, processing, or publishing any of its key economic metrics until lawmakers make a deal to restore government funding. The shutdown comes at a sensitive time. Hiring has slowed sharply in recent months. Friday's report would have offered clues as to whether that trend continued into the early fall. Instead, businesses and policymakers are left guessing about the strength of the job market. If the shutdown drags on more than a few days, it could also delay the next inflation report, which is set for release in 2 weeks. That report's part of a formula used to calculate next year's cost of living increase for Social Security. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Denmark is temporarily banning drones from its airspace as European leaders gather in Copenhagen for talks on defense and the war in Ukraine. Those meetings are taking place through tomorrow. As Terry Schultz reports, a number of suspicious drones violated Danish airspace last week and disrupted air travel.
Denmark says they were hybrid attacks, but that it's still assessing who's responsible for drones that flew around its airspace every night for a week. But with dozens of European leaders coming to Copenhagen for summits, the government isn't taking any chances. Civilian drones are banned from flying in Danish airspace until Friday. And in the meantime, NATO allies are helping keep watch over the capital. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte says it's important for NATO and the European Union to work together against Russia and other adversaries.
First of all, we have to keep our skies safe.
The European country most experienced in countering aerial attacks, Ukraine, has sent a team of specialists to help train Danes to deal with drones. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Public transportation in Greece is being disrupted today by a 24-hour strike. No trains, taxis, or ferries are operating in Athens. Buses and trolleys are running on reduced schedules. This is NPR News from Washington. Officials in North Carolina say 5 unoccupied homes on the Outer Banks have collapsed amid rough surf caused by hurricanes Umberto and Imelda in the open Atlantic. The National Park Service says the homes were in Buxton and were once propped up on high stilts. A bear named Chunk is this year's winner of Fat Bear Week in Alaska. As Ava White with Alaska Public Media reports, voters chose the biggest bear online.
It's the first time Chunk has been dubbed the fattest bear in Katmai National Park and Preserve. He has dark brown fur, a scar across his muzzle, and, most notably, a broken jaw that staff say will never fully heal. Katmai Park Ranger Sarah Bruce says staff didn't know if he'd still be able to feast on salmon, but he persevered and ate so much he now weighs over 1,200 pounds.
I think he just has really great stories to tell, and I think folks really cling on to what they can learn from the bears through their resilience, through their perseverance, and their boldness.
His victory was declared after he triumphed in a matchup after matchup in a bracket that drew a record number of voters from around the world, according to the National Park Service. For NPR News, I'm Ava White in Anchorage.
The Boston Red Sox rallied to beat the New York Yankees 3-1 last night to take the first game of their American League wildcard series. In the other AL matchup, Detroit beat Cleveland 2-1. In the National League wildcard games, the Cubs beat the Padres 3-1, and the Los Angeles Dodgers beat the Reds 10-5. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
It is 8:06, and it's time now for our first Area Voices this morning. The Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork has been selected as one of the 10 communities in Minnesota to host the 2025 Sketches of Minnesota. The event takes place on October 11th. The event is free, but you must register by October 5th. Here to talk more about the event is Barry Feld. Thank you for joining us, Barry.
Thank you very much for having me. Sketches of Minnesota is a really exciting program that creates unique comedy events in each community. They send they bring residents together for conversations, you know, during these difficult times. You know, we need opportunities to just come together and learn about our neighbors. So Sketches of Minnesota is a program that sends facilitators and improvisational comedians up to various communities. There were 10 selected last year. Emily was the closest one. And this year, The Edge of the Wilderness was selected. And so what they're going to do is, we will have a program that begins with a free dinner and then ends with a comedy show. And in the interim, during the dinner, there will be facilitators at each of the small tables. And they're just going to give us an opportunity to come together to talk about and to listen to each other and say, what do you like about living here? You know, what makes your town great? What are the things folks don't know about what it's like to live up here on the edge of the wilderness? And so while we're having dessert at this free catered dinner, the actors will go write a script, and not really a script, but, you know, figure out their dialogue, because improvisational comedy by definition is sort of, it's spontaneous, it's unscripted and collaborative, building off of the things they heard. So they sort of tell an area's story back to them in comedy. There's nothing political. This is a real, because up here, you know, we sort of each live in our own little bubbles and we don't have many opportunities to come together. So this is a way to get people to come together, to unite us and to not divide us and to build connections within a community and across communities.
Yeah. And also, like, what improv comedy, like, there's not a whole lot of opportunities to check it out a whole lot up here in northern Minnesota. So it's also a chance to see improv in action.
Yeah, we were really fortunate to be one of the 10 communities in greater Minnesota that was selected for this opportunity. And it's really, you know, when they were talking to us about what town they would call it, we said Edge of the Wilderness, because, you know, most of us are not in Marcel or Big Fork or Effie or Wirt or Togo and all of the areas in between. And so this is really kind of an area-wide event. You have to register for the dinner. The dinner is free. It's a catered dinner. You go to edgecenterarts.org/events. Edge Center Arts is all one word. It's lowercase. It's easy to register. edgecenterarts.org/events. And, you know, we would love to bring together as many of the folks, you know, up here as are listening, because, you know, it really is an opportunity for us to learn about each other and to build understanding within the community. And the comedy is really, it's sort of a story of a place in humor. And so each place where Sketches of Minnesota goes is a different comedic story.
Yeah. So Barry, what's your connection to this production?
Well, my wife, Patricia, is the artistic director at the Edge Center. And I have been involved with the Edge Center, well, you know, for the last, well, we built it in 2005, but, you know, for about a decade before that. But mostly this is just, I'm really enthusiastic about this program because, you know, I've been going around talking to my neighbors about it and handing out the postcards with the QR codes on it, because it really is a wonderful opportunity for lots and lots of different people just to get together and visit and, you know, have a good time and laugh. It's open to families, you know, kids who can sit through a theatrical performance. But again, you have to register edgecenterarts.org/events.
So, yeah, the comedy troupe is Dragon Boat Productions. Had you participated in, like, have you seen this event before? Like, how did this Sketches of Comedy, how did it, like, come into Edge Center for the Arts' radar?
Okay. Sandra LeBlanc Bolin is a phenomenal grant writer and is just a wonderful searcher for opportunities. And there was actually a competition of, you know, probably 36 communities that submitted the application, and we were one of the 10 that was selected this year. And it's a joint venture of the Minnesota Humanities Center, Danger Boat Productions, which is the comedy performers, the Clean Water and Land Legacy Amendment, and most importantly, the Blandin Foundation. You know, the Blandin Foundation is really helping to sponsor this event in a major way.
Yeah, and I think it's like a really unique event in terms of sometimes you kind of forget what makes your community special. So to have an outsiders come in and ask you about it and then be able to share that and then kind of portray it in like a production, like showcasing to you like what makes your community special, that's got to be like such a unique experience.
That's a perfect summary of what they're doing. And, you know, when you say unique, it's because each town's story is a different place. And so it's sort of bringing the conversations they hear to life and then showing back to all of us who we are together rather than apart.
Excellent. So is there a limit for how many people can sign up for this event?
No, there isn't. But we need to have the registration so we know how many dinners to have, you know, for the caterer to provide for us. So it is absolutely, I think, you know, I mean, October 5th or 6th, something like that. But register now because we're actually going to have a meeting later today to of the organizers of this to discuss what we're doing next. So edgecenterarts.org/events, and you can register right on the page there.
Excellent. So we've got the meal to start off, and then conversations, and then improv comedy troupe. That sounds like quite the night.
It is. It will be a lot of fun. It's the social hour starts at 5. The dinner is at 6. The show is probably around 7:30, and you know, half an hour, 45 minutes of laughing together about the things we love about where we are up here.
All right. So, Barry, just one last question for you. Like, what, in a perfect world, what would you hope people take away from this event?
Is that we, in fact, have much, much more in common. And the reasons why we live up here are shared values. And there's much more that unites us than divides us.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Barry, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And just a reminder to register this event by October 5th. It'll be happening October 11th. And yeah, so sign up today.
Edgecenterarts.org/events.
Perfect. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Now we're going to play a tune for you. This is Curtis Harding from the new album Departures and Arrivals, Adventures of Captain Kurt. This song is called Running Out of Space.
Thanks a lot. That was fun.
Thank you.
And that was Curtis Harding with the song Running Out of Space from the new album Departures and Arrivals, Adventures of Captain Kirk.
We received support from Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's Apple Service Center in Bemidji and Grand Rapids, offering both in-warranty and out-of-warranty service on Apple products and computer repair. More at paulbunyan.net.
Support for KAXE comes from UPM Blandin Paper, a provider of renewable material solutions with a focus on sustainability and innovation. Additional information is available at upm.com.
Support for KAXE comes from Atchison Tire in Grand Rapids, providing service and offering tire brands like Bridgestone, Firestone, and Toyo, serving the area since 1916. More at atchisontire.com.
And that's DJ Dang. I'm Andrew DeZingle. We're your Wednesday morning show crew, and we're here until 9 o'clock. Then we're going to hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters.
And coming up later today at 1 o'clock, your volunteer on the river host will actually not be a volunteer at all. It's our staff technician and engineer, Steve Noy, will be on from 1 to 4. And tonight we'll be running a show from Katie Carter from 7 to 10.
So you're hosting Headwaters tomorrow morning from 9 to 11 a.m.
Facts.
Kind of a peek behind the curtain for, because a big portion of the Headwaters is new music.
Mm-hmm.
So for, we get new albums all the time. Do you listen to the entire album to pick out songs, or have you kind of, like, what's your process in finding new tunes to play on Headwaters?
Occasionally I'll listen to the whole record. More often than not, all of our records have recommendations on them, so a plus sign means it's kind of, it's a double thumbs up from one of the music staff, or a little slash mark means, yeah, that's a pretty good song. I'll often focus on those, and if none of that's hitting my fancy, then I'll look for a cool song title. I don't know if you do that. Do you look for song titles and
really?
Think like, oh, that sounds like a cool song title, I might get this record.
Yeah, I kind of do that sometimes.
Yeah, if it's an artist you're not familiar with or you don't know. So I do that. So first I look for the recommendations. Then I look for song titles that appeal to me, and then I just start listening. But rarely do I listen to the whole record. I just don't have the time to, I mean, just in this last week we've got probably 7 or 8 new records in, and that's probably an average of 12 songs per record. That's, you know, almost 100 songs to listen to in every week. That's a lot.
Plus, we got some big albums that just came out recently. The new Wednesday album, getting mm-hmm. a lot of buzz. The new Geese album came out last Friday.
Yep, we'll have that. I think it's on the racks at KAXE already, and it'll be on the racks today here in KBXE.
And also, Jeff Tweedy's releasing a triple album. I don't know if it is out last Friday or it's coming out this week. I'm not sure which.
Yeah, it's Jeff Tweedy from Wilco. We have the single, or actually we don't have the single, but we've played the single a couple times and it's really, really good. Lou Reed was my babysitter.
Yes, and that's the song I'm actually going to play right now. We're both a big fan of this song. It's, do you say, like, you can hear the Lou Reed influence on this song?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, I read Jeff Tweedy's biography or autobiography, I guess, because he wrote it, and he talks at length about how influenced he was by groups like the Velvet Underground, Stooges, and kind of a lot of the groups that a lot of us that got into punk rock eventually were influenced by as well. And it's interesting that he kind of made his name as a Americana alt country dude, and I think this song gets back to his musical roots for me.
All right, so here's Jeff Tweedy with the new tune, Lou Reed Was My Babysitter.
Look out. shake, 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 and feel my shoes untie. This rock and roll ain't never gonna die. Not as long as you and I are alive. Cause rock and roll is dead, but the dead don't die.
Today's date, October 1st, 2007, I took an inventory of flowers that I was still finding in bloom. Among them, red clover, tansy, goldenrod, yarrow, common sow thistle, black-eyed Susans, white clover, and Canada thistle. Every year, in mid-September and on through at least October, perhaps mid-November, I try to do an inventory of the flowers that are still in bloom. And comparing those over the years, I find that it's often the same group. Red clover, of course, is that clover-like flower. It's a bright red color and is pretty easy to find. Tansy is one of those invasive species, and it seems like there one or two of those tansy blossoms will hold on forever. Goldenrod typically is done blooming before the 1st of October, but in this year I was able to find one. Yarrow, another one of those plants that can keep on blooming. Sow thistle, that was a bit of a surprise. Black-eyed Susans, they tend to peak in August, but boy, they are oftentimes among the last flowers that we're likely to see in the fall.
And there's your Daily Dose of Phenology with John Latimer. Before that, we heard Jeff Tweedy from his new album, triple album, Twilight Override. That song was called Lou Reed Was My Babysitter. You're tuned in to the Wednesday morning show. I'm Andrew Dezingle with DJ Dang.
Good morning. I have a Lou Reed story. Do we have time for it?
Yeah, go ahead.
So my first ever proper concert, I was 16 years old, and we slept out on the sidewalk to get tickets to go see REO Speedwagon play at the Chicago Amphitheater.
Take it on the run, baby.
They're a Chicago area band, and it was sold out. It was huge. So we went to the show. The show was awesome. I was like, wow, rock and roll is cool. This is amazing. And then when we were leaving, the lights came on, band was done, and the sound guy played Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. And I was like, what in the world is this kind of music? I had never heard any punk rock. I'd never heard any alternative anything, just whatever was on mainstream radio. And I think that moment in a big way changed my life, because maybe 2 months later, I got my first punk rock mixtape, and then away we go. So thank you, Lou Reed.
Yeah, it's a good end of concert song, too.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was awesome. Perfect. So he wasn't my babysitter, but Lou Reed played a role.
Nice.
For sure. We received support from Buckhorn on Caribou Lake, featuring five handcrafted log cabins in the Chippewa National Forest just north of Grand Rapids, offering fishing, swimming, and hiking on site. Rates and information at buckhornoncaribou.com.
And we received support from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market. Open Wednesdays and Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Golf Course Road and Pokegama Avenue, offering an EBT double match and many more programs, bringing produce to members of our community. More at grfarmersmarket.org. And coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to have our second area voices of the day. But first, we're going to hear the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Minnesota renters who use Section 8 housing vouchers or other subsidies now enjoy the same eviction protections as all other renters, thanks to a Minnesota Supreme Court decision filed last week. The decision reverses precedent set by the Court of Appeals in 1995. The Minnesota Reformer explains that landlords in Minnesota can evict tenants over lease violations like using drugs or committing other crimes. But if a landlord accepts a rent payment after finding out about a lease violation, they can't evict the tenant over that specific breach of the lease. In other words, by accepting a rent payment despite knowing about a lease violation, the landlord waives their right to evict. This protection did not apply to renters who received public subsidies, including Section 8 housing vouchers. The Minnesota Human Rights Act prohibits landlords from discriminating against tenants who receive rental assistance. The court decision brings case law in line with state statutes. In less than 100 days, Minnesota's new paid leave law takes effect. Labor and business groups are getting the word out so that employers and employees are prepared. The law was approved in 2023 with ongoing implementation efforts since then. Starting January 1st of next year, most workers can apply for up to 12 weeks of medical leave or 12 weeks of family leave. It's managed by the state with a payroll tax evenly split between the employer and employee to cover partial wage replacements for time off. Maureen Dunaway with the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees says that like unemployment insurance, these new guarantees will serve as a bridge during major life events.
An economy does better when the people that have to participate in that economy have the ability to keep it sustained. And, you know, that financial security reduces stress.
MAPE is putting out consistent messaging to its members so they know about qualifying events and other details. While the law is celebrated for improving worker stability, skeptics worry about administrative burdens for small firms. Lauren Schotthorst with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce says they recognize the importance of paid leave, but still prefer private sector solutions. She says the pending changes follow several other new employment laws, putting extra pressure on smaller businesses focused on scaling up.
It's been a real big compliance challenge across the board. This is another one. It's one of the final ones over the past 3 years, and we want to make sure businesses recognize it's going into effect and how close they are to that deadline.
Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. Numerous coat drives are offered throughout northern Minnesota as the inevitable winter approaches. Although the weather outside is unseasonably warm at the moment, now is the time to donate. Larissa Donovan has more.
Clean and gently used coats and other winter items will be accepted through Tuesday, October 7th, ahead of the United Way of Bemidji area's planned distribution of coats at First Lutheran the following Saturday. Winter gear for men, women, children, and infants can be dropped off at either Lucan's Village Food Store or Dress Club Cleaners downtown. The Brainerd YMCA and Knights of Columbus are accepting donations for children's outerwear in the Brainerd area through October 8th. The Coats for Kids distribution will take place October 18th at the Westgate Mall. The United Methodist Church of Grand Rapids is hosting the Open Door Coat Rack, an annual event sponsored by area churches and volunteers. Donations of clean, gently used outerwear on hangers will be accepted at the church beginning Saturday, October 18th, with a two-day distribution starting Wednesday, October 22nd. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
The Minnesota Department of Transportation is starting a pavement resurfacing project on Highway 2 in Cohasset on Wednesday. Work will be taking place between East Bass Lake and Pin Cherry Roads. Motorists can expect lane closures and shifts, and work is expected to be complete on October 10th. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources State Forest Nursery will open seedling sales for spring 2026 at 9 a.m. on Wednesday. Landowners across Minnesota can order native bare root tree seedlings for their properties. This year, the DNR is launching a new online ordering system. Seedling sales remain open through April 3rd or until stock is sold out. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE, KBXE, People Power Radio. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with DJ Dang.
Hello, hello.
So I was just thinking the other day, is there any better feeling than when you go to a record store and you get like a pile of records and the person doing the checkout is like, oh, this is good.
There is something about getting the nod, wink, or verbal approval of a record store clerk where they're like, mm-hmm, yeah, game recognized game, right? It's true. I just bought a pile of records down in the cities a couple weekends ago and did not get that, but the person was very friendly and nice, and but I didn't get that affirmation. But I'm kind of past and like looking for it, or not that I ever wanted it. It's nice when it happens, but I was never like, and where's my, what? You don't think that one's cool? You just scanned it. That's a dope record right there, buddy.
So I didn't get it for my purchases on my records, but as soon as I walked in the shop, I got a compliment on my Namdi shirt I was wearing.
Oh yes, my gosh.
That very cool Namdi shirt.
Yeah, from an employee or just
from
shopper?
Yeah, from an employee.
Oh.
So that felt really cool.
You were just glowing. That shirt was probably much easier to understand than the one you're currently wearing with the Parthenon, with the word Glasgow underneath the Parthenon, which is just, somebody doesn't
know
their geography.
You just have a really good design. It doesn't need to make sense.
Geographically all over the place.
So it's October now. Are you a scary movie watcher?
I find most scary movies to be comedies of sorts.
Oh.
Because they're so predictable. You're like, oh gosh, they're opening that door. Let the hilarity of slashing ensue. But my partner will not watch those movies ever.
Uh-huh.
Ever. So I guess I don't watch very many of them anymore either.
Do you have a favorite? Like, what's your like?
Yeah, I have Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Yeah, I think I heard Malachi talking about it last week, I believe, with whoever he was co-hosting with, and they were unfamiliar with it.
Really?
But great, great mix of comedy and kind of jump scares and grossness. And
see, I always assume Evil Dead 2 is more of the comedy mixed in.
I like them both. But yeah, Evil Dead 2 definitely was more outwardly, or obviously a comedy than Evil Dead 1. But Evil Dead 1 was also wink, wink, nod, nod. To the sort of genre of horror movies.
The director, Sam Raimi, he said like his favorite pastime was torturing the star, Bruce Campbell, on any movie.
Oh, my goodness. I was waiting to hear what, his favorite pastime was torturing, and I'm like, I don't think I want to hear this sentence end. I'll have to change my answer.
Dumping buckets of fake blood on him and spinning him around.
What's your favorite horror movie?
John Carpenter's The Thing. That's my favorite one.
I know I've seen it, but I cannot remember. Does it part of it take place in Antarctica or the Arctic?
Yeah, it's like a Antarctic base, science base or whatever, and that's where the creature comes in.
Yeah.
The Thing, as you might call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just great. The ending is so bleak. It's just, I love it.
What about something in the last 5 years?
Last 5 years.
Are you a fan of any of the Jordan Peele horror movies?
I loved Get Out. The other two, I guess they were kind of horror, but they didn't. They're not ones I like want to revisit anytime. I would revisit Get Out though. The Witch, but that was already over 5 years ago. I love that movie. It's just like eerie.
I saw that one.
Gosh, I can't think of more recent ones. Did you
fall for the Blair Witch Project when it came out? Were you like, oh my gosh?
By then, I remember the rumors that it was a real story.
Yeah.
They actually found these tapes. And I didn't see it when it came out. I didn't see it till like 5 years ago. And I was living in the woods, and boy, was it good. That movie
really
holds up.
Even though you knew.
Yeah.
Oh, see, that's what ruined it for me. So the movie came out, whatever year it was, I don't remember.
1999.
And I didn't see it for the first 6 months, probably. So 6 months in, it was well known that it was a mockumentary, that it wasn't really any kind of anything. They just made it up, of course. But it was being presented as like an actual footage of something that happened in the woods. It was real.
They had the stars in the movie, like, stay away from any press thing so that they would think they actually disappeared.
Yeah. But so once I realized that it wasn't a documentary or found footage or anything like that, I watched the movie and I was like, not scared. Not
really.
Yeah.
I think last like half hour of that movie is so good.
The knowledge it just ruined it, right?
So does any horror movie work for you then? Because you know it's not real?
Well, that one was being portrayed in the public as if it was like a real, like, we found this camera footage of these kids lost in the woods and oh my gosh, it's so scary what happened to them. So that was the whole structure or legend of the movie, was that it was real. So and all the others, you understand going into it, it's not real. But in a way, that's why a movie like Get Out is interesting too, is because it sort of has a twist on things like racism or the history of slavery or whatever. So it has that believability element in it. But yeah, I think that is part of it. Like most horror movies, I'm just like, okay. It's hard for me to suspend belief.
Oh, Weapons. That was a horror movie that came out this year that I really enjoyed.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, a bunch of kids just disappear. They all like leave their house at 2:41 in the morning or something like that.
Whoa.
And the town's is like, what happened?
Wow.
Kind of thing.
Interesting.
So
check for that one.
Yeah, I think you would like that one. I should tell you right now, it's not a documentary. It's a scripted movie.
But boy, if it involves kids going missing, I am so in.
But that same director, he made The Barbarian. Did you see that movie?
No, I never heard of it.
It's a great horror movie. I don't want to spoil it at all because you really should go into it not knowing anything about it.
Okay.
Because it's fantastic.
Okay.
But it was a sketch comedy guy just like Jordan Peele. So it's funny that sketch comedy guys love making literal
horror
movies.
Yeah, we should have asked your man from the improv in Big Fork.
Barry,
like, what's your background in horror?
So coming up next, we have our next area voices talking about Verse Like Water here on National, what was it?
Poetry Day.
Acts of Poetry Day. Random Acts of Poetry Day. So that'll be coming up in just a bit. Programming is supported by Empty Bowls, fighting local hunger and building a stronger community with the Grand Rapids and Deer River Community Cafe. The event takes place Thursday, October 23rd at Timber Lake Lodge from 11 to 2 and 4 to 7. Tickets include soup and a locally made ceramic bowl. More info on Facebook at Itasca Empty Bowls Project.
We would like to thank the Lake Country Journal, a lifestyle magazine since 1997, a local publication sharing stories from the heart of Minnesota about the places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country, lakecountryjournal.com.
Now it's time for our second Area Voices. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Poetry is one of the oldest art forms in the world, but I think it still has an intimidating factor to people. The Verse Like Water program, which will be beginning its 14th year at Central Lakes College, hopes to dispel that notion to people and show that poetry is for everyone. Today, I'm joined by the director of Verse Like Water, Jeff Johnson, to talk about the upcoming year of the program.
Verse Like Water is a reading series that is devoted exclusively to poets and poetry. I began it at CLC shortly after I arrived there 13 years ago, and it's just one of the big passions in my life. It is fueled by legacy funds that I access through Five Wings Arts Council and, of course, the Minnesota State Arts Board. And I hosted my 50th poet this past spring, Greg Ripardlo, and that guy's got a Pulitzer. The point of the series is to celebrate beauty. The big passion in my life, after my faith and my family, is to create events that bring people together to experience beauty. Beauty that is a fundamental source of human happiness. Beauty whose source and destination is God. And I've been at this a long time. I bring people's attention to beauty with my students in live classes. I take a fall trip every year with my CLC students to the MIA. We take a spring trip to the Guthrie. And that's exactly what every poetry reading that I organize and promote and host is about, growing poetry and bringing people's attention to beauty.
Who will be participating this year?
Well, the first poet I'm going to host this year is going to be the great Lee Young Lee. And I'm going to be introducing him in the Chalberg at noon on October 8th. We'll greet him with a welcome brunch. Because of the support of the Olseth Family Foundation, every attendee that comes to one of my poetry readings gets a beautiful hardcover book. So I'll be dishing 225 copies of his newest book, The History of the Darling. There'll be a book signing after that, and then a craft talk. I just over the weekend realized that I need to bump the great Marie Howe, who just won the Pulitzer this past spring. I'm going to bump her a little bit later in the year because I just made a wonderful agreement with Blue Flower Arts in New York. I am going to suddenly be hosting our brand new U.S. Poet Laureate, Arthur Xie. He has somehow agreed to slide way down on his feet to read for my series. He knows about it. He knows about me. And that's because of the great Forrest Gander. They're dear friends. Then I'll host Marie Howe. We'll just see how it goes. It's kind of one grant at a time.
For an event like this, it's not just students that are welcome to attend. Is that correct?
Oh, no, my goodness. You know, one of the rules, if you're an arts provider getting money from the State Arts Board or the regional granting agency, Five Wings, it's a rule. The arts are for everyone in Minnesota. So all my events are wide open for the public. It's not just for the colleges, faculty, staff, and students. We love community members, and we've had people coming from the Grand Rapids area since the early days of me talking on KAXE. No, we want everyone. And increasingly, it's been about involving our college and the schools, high schools. The arts are for everyone.
So with poetry, it seems like the time that people turn to it most is either during like moments of like extreme joy or extreme grief. What in your opinion is it about poetry that speaks to people at like such extreme times in their life?
With great poets and great poetry, I guess I would say that there's a kind of compression with language, which creates an intensity that a prose stylist simply is not going to be able to achieve. Poets are prodigious noticers of the world, and a great poem helps us see the world better. It's Adam Zagajewski who says that lyric poets provide us moments of lucidity. And you said just such a true thing right now. It's going to be the wedding that you need a poem for. It's going to be your beloved grandmother's funeral that you're going to look to verse for. Maybe a retirement speech would be a moment where you would call on a poet. And one of the ways I think of it is that great literature, great imaginative literature, which is where I see all the fire and light, it's actually equipment. It's equipment that can help us live our lives better. The trick is, it's not taught very well in school, so one of my jobs, to quote Billy Collins, who I've hosted three times, our most famous poet, my job is kind of to get everyone to just, I've got to, you know, knock out the anti-poetry deflector shields that were pretty much installed in high school. When maybe poetry put us down, maybe when we were made to feel uncomfortable about a poem because we didn't quite understand it. Fully understanding a poem is not the point. Get a line or two, get an idea or two, an image. That's enough. And the main thing that I've seen in all these years, and I've been doing this a long time, I've been doing it since the 80s, the principal thing that I see on the gazes of attendees is absolute astonishment, because they come in with pretty low expectations. The bar is low, and they, you know, they arrive bored, maybe peeking at their phones. They leave transformed every time.
So, yeah, that's got to be such a great feeling to like provide a space for a life-changing experience for people.
Yes, yes. Lee Young is he's got 2 years on me. He's 67 years old. He started my first series at St. John's Prep School, and he was the first verse like water poet. I wanted to bring him because symmetry demanded for the 10th year, but that year his 96-year-old mother died, and he was her principal caretaker. And he texted me and let me know that he just didn't feel like being around people. And I'm so excited to be hosting him for a third and kind of final time, probably, because we're both slowly running out of road. He's an Indo-Chinese guy. He was born in Indonesia. His father, if you can believe this, was the principal physician of Chairman Mao. He ran afoul of Mao and got booted into exile. And his Li Yong's family found his way to America in the 60s. All poets are concerned right now with violence. It's really interesting to be hosting a poet in such a crisis time, which is kind of what began when the pandemic commenced. And he's very interested in the relationship between violence and culture. And he wonders out loud if that's necessity. Why are the first cities founded by murderers is among his questions. But I really think he's at his absolute best when he's writing about his family, when he's writing about his beloved wife, and when he's writing about his parents. And I got a little poem here that could prove that. I'll read you what I think is Li Yong's finest poem, The Gift. To pull the metal splinter from my palm, my father recited a story in a low voice. I watched his lovely face and not the blade. Before the story ended, he'd removed the iron sliver I thought I'd die from. I can't remember the tale, but hear his voice still, a well of dark water, a prayer. And I recall his hands, two measures of tenderness he laid against my face, the flames of discipline he raised above my head. Had you entered that afternoon, you would have thought you saw a man planting something in a boy's palm, a silk tear, a tiny flame. Had you followed that boy, you would have arrived here, where I bend over my wife's right hand. Look how I shave her thumbnail down so carefully, she feels no pain. Watch as I lift the splinter out. I was 7 when my father took my hand like this, and I did not hold that shard between my fingers and think, metal that will bury me, christen it little assassin, or going deep from my heart. And I did not lift up my wound and cry, death visited here. I did what a child does when he's given something to keep. I kissed my father. So that's the most beautiful poem as far as I'm concerned that he's ever dreamed into being. I should mention, too, my poetry readings are always free and open to the public. All you got to do is just show up, grab a book, find a seat, and get ready to realize that great literature is truly entertaining. That's true of poetry readings, too.
So, yeah, the first one for the season will be on October 8th. How can people keep up to date on when the next Verse Like Water events will be?
I've got a website. At CLC, all you have to do is go to the Central Lakes College page and enter Verse Like Water up into the little search engine. But for this first reading, all they need to know is that it's going to be October 8th. Then I'll put our new U.S. Poet Laureate's name on the October 15th Five Wings Arts Council application for winter. And then will come Marie. In November, too, and I'll try to get that on the website, too. November 8th, 1 month after this, I'm hosting a reception for poets from all over Minnesota. For the second year in a row, I have co-sponsored a statewide poetry contest with Lake Country Journal, Zoo Flower Agency, Crossing Arts Alliance, and there's Five Wings again, making sure that we've got prize money and travel money for all those poets. I'm just so excited to live in a state where we put away an awful lot of funding for the arts of all kinds.
So for someone, because like you mentioned earlier, I think people might be intimidated of, like, they may not feel that they're qualified to attend something like a poetry reading. What would your advice be to them of, like, what kind of mindset to go into something like Verse Like Water?
Well, I think the first thing they've got to realize is, again, that the arts are for everyone. When we think about the arts, our culture kind of nudges us to imagine the idea that it's just for, like, hipsters in the city who, you know, go to galleries dressed all in black, you know, sipping Sauvignon Blanc, looking at, you know, post-contemporary art that's generally lost its way. All they have to do is arrive with an open heart and be ready to accept and receive whatever happens. Poets they're generally regular people. They're just like us. And there's an element to of performance to it, right? The poets are not just standing there reading their poems. They are performing. They're telling stories. There's laughter, usually, at poetry readings. They do have to be ready for the silence. There is silence at poetry readings, generally between the poems. That's probably the only thing that might make them uncomfortable. And my advice to them, to your listeners, is the same advice I give my students. Just inhabit the silence. Just let it wash over you and wait for the music of the poetry to begin again. I should mention, too, if your listeners enter verse like water just into any search engine, one of the only good things that happened with the pandemic is that we learned how to stream. I mean, we got very good with streaming poetry events. I'm sad to tell you that this one won't be streamed because my friend Lee Young doesn't even like to be photographed. But there are a number of beautiful poetry readings that your audience members can watch online to see what it's like. Gregory Pardlow's reading is there. U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera's reading is there. It'll be up there forever. There's beautiful recordings of my poetry readings that might help them decide that it's worth it to make the drive, to make the effort. We have to make the effort to get to the arts, and it's really easy not to go. I tell my students this. It's so easy not to go, but they have to make the effort. Get up. Go to the gallery. Go watch the foreign film. Go to the crazy dance performance from New York. They just got to make the effort. And that's why I throw it on shameless extra credit to get my students there, because they need to have that habitude of mind installed into their minds and hearts to pursue great experiences with the arts. I do want to emphasize, in recent years, this getting books out has become way more important to me. In the early days, I just gave out bookmarks, right? Now, every attendee, thanks to the Olseth Family Foundation and my friend John Olseth, who's also an English teacher down at Riverland, he has promised that he will provide a poetry book for every single attendee. So 225 hardcover copies of Lee Young's new book are winging their way towards my college, courtesy of Norton at 51% off. And the same thing with Marie. She's published by Norton. I've already got on reserve another 225 copies of her book. And I guess my final comment to you would be, it's something I said to the State Arts Board people when Sue Jens asked me to come and give a report at the Great River Regional Arts Center in Little Falls to her board. You only need a few books of poetry to feel like you're book wrapped. 10 to 15 poetry books, you can feel wrapped in them, enclosed in them. So I would encourage all your KAXE listeners, and I love your radio station, by the way, start finding poetry books. It's easy.
Jeff Johnson has been my guest today. Verse Like Water begins on October 8th at noon. Aerial Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. And you're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Dang. And in just a bit, we're going to hand things over to Kari Headland for Headwaters.
Cumbia! I think it's the only musical genre where they have to yell out the genre in the middle of the song.
What about polka?
Do they say, well, I guess they say everybody polka. It's more of a command, but do polka bands just go polka?
I think so.
Do they?
I think so.
I think they say like everybody polka.
No, I've heard like just people just shouting polka.
Well, then polka and cumbia both use accordions, by the way. Heavy use of accordion in both these genres of music where they have to shout out the genre of music. Like, can you imagine listening to Bach and they're like, classical!
I don't think they called it classical then, but...
what'd they call it? Music?
Orchestral!
Music! So, after listening to your interview with the Verse Like Water fellow there, and you and I were kind of talking briefly about poetry, and I mentioned one poem that's always grabbed me, and it's really just two lines from a stanza, and you said, oh, from Willy Wonka, and I know it from being spray painted on walls in Minneapolis, which is two vastly different ways of coming to a poem, but if I can briefly.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the poem's called Ode, and it was written in 1873 by an Irishman, Arthur O'Shaughnessy, and I'll just read the first stanza. It says, we are the music makers, we are the dreamers of dreams, wandering by the lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams, world losers and world forsakers, on whom the pale moon gleams, yet we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems.
Nice.
Oh, heck yeah.
Random Acts of Poetry Day today.
Yes.
Celebrating here on the Wednesday Morning Show. We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
This is 90.